Hello and welcome to the Divorced Dadvocate. My name is Jude Sandoval and I am your host today. This is the community for helping you to create a healthy and less traumatic divorce. I'm so pleased that you're here today. I'm a little bit fired up. I found an article that's been on my desk, has been marinating with me that I wanted to chat with you about today. It is called "Parents Are Sacrificing Their Social Lives on the Altar of Intensive Parenting." Obviously, this caught my eye because I'm a parent, right? And it is challenging oftentimes to be a single dad, as I know a lot of you are experiencing or have experienced. But first, before we get into this, I do want to remind you, if you find some value in the podcast, if you listen more than once, or if you've shared this with anybody else, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. Take a minute, put this on pause, and write a little review on whatever podcast platform. It helps us immensely. We are growing tremendously. We got more and more dads coming to the workshops, and more dads coming to the classes, coming to the group meetings, coming to our events. So slowly but surely, we are growing and we need your help in just spreading that word. So like us, share on social media, anything helps. And also make sure to utilize those resources in the show notes below. The dads group that meets bi-monthly is a great free resource that a lot of men have been connecting with other men going through divorce. So hope that you will utilize some of that and also help us out by doing one of those few things. So last time I chatted with you about an article that annoyed me, we were talking about the rewriting of intersexual dynamics. And that was an article in the Harvard Business Review that was espousing a load about the disparity in how men and women are parenting and the time that they're putting in you know, these articles. And this one, again, the title is "Parents Are Sacrificing Their Social Lives on the Altar of Intensive Parenting." It was it appeared in The Atlantic on April 18th. And it's written by a psychologist and senior fellow at the Council on Contemporary Families. So it seems innocent enough, that title, but I'm going to go through it in specific detail. And the reason I want to go through this, I'm going to give you just a couple of heads up, because there is a concerted shift in thinking in the psychological world, American Psychological Association and psychiatry, and everywhere else that is not benefiting men and definitely not benefiting dads and dads and families. And so I want you to be aware of this, because what's happening is your ex or soon to be ex is probably hearing some of this language. You may have already heard some of this language. This language is prevalent in the court systems. It's prevalent, like I said, in therapy, in the psychological world right now. And it's creating a false narrative that's not true. And it's having a detrimental impact on families. Now, I feel that this is coordinated and on purpose. And I'm going to go through this article and point out some of the reasons why this article is propaganda around what I'm talking about. But I want you to be aware of that. And so kind of try to take the thought process or take the tack when you're listening of that, of how this language, or if I've heard this language, or how this language can be impacting me, impacting my life, impacting my kids, and what is it doing for my family and families in general, and what can I be doing to mitigate some of this. So let's get rolling in this. It starts out with a fairly innocuous statement. American parents have been pressured into making a costly wager. If they sacrifice their hobbies, interests, and friendships to devote as much time and as many resources as possible to parenting, they might be able to launch their children into a stable adulthood. Okay, right? Like, so when we decide to come become parents, we are definitely making a sacrifice in our lives. I don't know about you. When I became a parent, my whole life changed, and I would say for the better. I can barely remember my life before I was a parent, but that's definitely a positive statement. It's definitely something that we will make sacrifices for our children. They go on to say in the next paragraph, prior generations didn't need to be as preoccupied with their children's well-being or future, which I thought was interesting because as far as I knew, my parents were concerned about my well-being and my future. And I know that their parents were, and I think maybe your parents were. And while some parents are better or worse at parenting, I know that most all parents, majority at least, have their best interest or the well-being and the future of their children in mind. So thought that started to be interesting. And then starts to state in the 1960s, his brothers and he were as luxuriously removed from his parents' minds as they were from ours. It was the gilded age of childhood freedom. My brothers and I consumed hours of television and ate staggering amounts of sugar for breakfast. We vanished each morning, biked back for lunch, and then disappeared again till dusk. My parents also had a life. My mother played mahjong weekly with the girls and went out every weekend with my father without calling it date night. My dad played squash on weekends at the downtown YMCA and didn't seem to worry about whether my brothers and I felt neglected. The amount of time they spent on activities and with people outside the family was common for that era, which I kind of wonder how or why that is just common for that area and not common for our area, because the dads that I know and the dads that I'm surrounded with do have outside interests, and we do participate in things. Now, I will make a point here is since the 1960s, I say maybe a few things have changed. There's a little bit more technology going on. There was TV, right? And it was from 8 or 9 in the morning till it signed off at 8 or 9 at night. There wasn't 5,000 channels 24 hours a day. There wasn't Xbox. There wasn't international travel. There wasn't space travel. There wasn't all the video gaming, everything else that we have now. So perhaps, there are more opportunities for entertainment than the ones that he's stating is going to state coming up here. He uses a quote from a sociologist, and here's where I want to point something out and make sure that you pay attention to this as well, as cherry picking quotes and statistics. Any good social scientist is going to look at a broad spectrum of data points and things to come to a conclusion and not just cherry pick the specific ones that are necessary or will support a given narrative. So keep that in mind. You're going to hear a lot of quotes in here from sociologists. So we'll see how that plays out. But this sociologist states, in my parents' generation, and now they're talking parents' generation, he grew up in the 1960s, so the generation before that, right? So from the 1930s to the 60s, 70s. So we're talking, for me, I'm a Gen Xer, that's two generations ago. In my parents' generation, had 51% more friends, were 39% more likely to share friends with their spouse, had 168% more organizational memberships, and were 133% more likely to share those affiliations with their spouse than those born in 1960 and after. So what he's stating here, if you weren't able to do the math and fully think about what this time frame is in the early 1900s to the mid 1900s, people basically stayed together more because they shared friends with their spouses. So divorce and single parenting wasn't normalized like it is now. It had more organizational memberships because that might have been something that they had as entertainment as opposed to the Xbox or movie theaters or something else. and were more inclined to share those affiliations with their spouse, which you would hope in a good relationship and a marriage you were doing. So it's interesting substantiation for that point of they spent on activities with people outside the family was common for that area. He goes on to say, my parents were likely more relaxed than the generations that followed them because they could assume that their kids would do better than they did. Wow, that is a huge, huge jump right there. So you kind of see the crux of where this is going. He uses a quote, from 1950 to 1970, the yearly income of the median worker more than doubled, and those at the bottom of the earnings distribution saw their earnings increase even more. All right, here's a little foreshadowing, folks, starting to talk about economics and economic diversity, distribution of earnings, et cetera. So just keep that in the back of your mind. It goes on to say the number of low-income students and attending universities nearly doubled between 1965 and 1971. There was still poverty in rural areas and racial discrimination still restricted opportunities for many. However, segregation was slowly decreasing and income distribution was becoming more equal. Outside agriculture and temporary work industries, employers typically provided health insurance and many jobs guaranteed a pension. So now they're setting up the 1960s, the 1950s and 1960s economic situation. And here we go with what happened subsequently. But as inflation, economic stagnation and fears of communism rose in the 1970s, notions of restructuring the economy took hold, including a free market unhindered by government regulation. All right, here we go. Now we're starting to get into the nitty-gritty of this. So what was this? Parents are sacrificing their social lives on the altar of intensive parenting. Oh no, this might just be a policy paper masquerading as a parenting article. This is what you need to be aware of, my friends. This is coming from everywhere. The Atlantic, Harvard Business Review, you're seeing it in USA Today. You're seeing it prevalent everywhere in every corner of our society right now, and it is not helping our families. So let's go on to the next thing. By the 1980s, businesses and government were well on their way to ending the social contract that benefited baby boomers. Now, I don't know exactly how or where they came up with that correlation, but it's as much as a jump as their statement that their parents were more relaxed because they could assume that their kids would be doing better than previous generations. They go on to describe this as the great risk shift, where economic and health risk were offloaded by government and corporations onto the increasingly fragile balance sheets of workers and their families. All right, now here we go. We're really into this this full-scale assault on the free market, capitalist society, and what the obsession with communism in the 1970s led to in the subsequent decades. We go on to say that, for example, from 1980 to 2004, the number of workers covered by a traditional retirement pension decreased by 60% to 11%. Job-based health coverage provides far less protection to U.S. workers under dependents than it once did. Today, the average middle-class married couple with children in the U.S. works an additional 15 weeks of full-time employment each year compared with couples in 1975. All right, now here is one of those statistics that I was talking about that they just cherry-pick. This statistic is stating that middle-class married couples with children. Okay, so work an additional 15 weeks of full-time employment each year compared with couples in 1975. Well, what is the big difference between the workplace now and the workplace in 1975? Okay, if you didn't guess it, it's that women are in the workplace at a massively bigger number than they were in 1975. It has become normalized that women and there are two working parents in a household now. So this basic statistic, while being utilized to try to make a narrative point or push forward their narrative point, really, if you look at it, could be based upon some other factor other than, you know, terrible capitalist society or people choosing to have two parents go to work. Parents' anxiety about financial security and the world that awaits their kids pushed American households into a frenzy of work and parenting, seemingly causing many to jettison friendships and activities in order to create more time to supervise and advance their kids. Well, all right. Well, at least we're back to the title of the article and some semblance of thinking about the parenting part of this. But my question is what exactly is this based upon? Another sociologist quote, because there is nothing that supports this. You know, if this was true in your life and you need to take care of you first, and this is a good point. And I do want to bring up this point for all of you going through a divorce, and we talk about it often, and even those that are just post-divorce, it's important that you are taking care of yourself and you're taking care of yourself first. And so this is aside from that, from this article, in that we can't take care of our family, we can't take care of our children if we're not taking care of yourself. You're not getting the rest that you need, the proper nutrition, eating, exercising, sleeping, doing what you're supposed to be doing at the bare minimum of those four things for yourself. So looking out for yourself and making sure that you are healthy in a good state is never a selfish thing to do. And it will also show and model a good way of life for your children as well. So I don't know how much of this is rooted in anxiety about financial security and the world that awaits their kids, but we do have the power to be able to move our lives in the direction that we want to. And that's what this show has been about the whole time and continues to be about, is how do you take this opportunity now to move yourself forward? So he goes on to say, here's some economists. So we shifted from sociologists, but economists explain that the turn to intensive parenting was in part a reaction to rising economic equality. Okay, so now here we go now with the narratives, right? The equality part of it. And in their book, they argue that in countries with high social inequality, such as the US and Canada, parents are required to do far more to support and prepare their children because business and government do so little. All right, so now I think we've kind of totally pulled the mask off this. Right, this is not a parenting article, and not worried about people sacrificing their social lives, but more talking about the inequality of businesses and governments doing so little, because business and government should be the mommy and daddy of your children, not you. Right, they're the ones that made you have a child, and they're the ones that should be making the decisions for your child. Right, wrong. This is the problem. If we start to abdicate our responsibilities and fall under this mentality and believe that businesses and governments should be taking more care of us and our families, then we're going to have a big problem when businesses and governments, like you're starting to see now, decide that they're going to do stuff that we're not necessarily comfortable with. And then if they're the mommy and daddy of you and your children, you're not going to have the ability to say no to what mommy and daddy, business and government have to say. So this now gets a little bit interesting, because once they pull the mask off, they shift this a little bit and state, meanwhile, the number of hours they spent with children skyrocketed. From 1965 to 2011, married fathers nearly tripled their time from 2.6 hours to 7.2 hours a week with children, while married mothers increased their time by almost a third, from 10.6 hours to 14.3 hours a week in the same period, according to a 2013 report by Pew. In that time, single mothers almost doubled the amount of time spent with their children, from 5.8 hours a week in 1985 to 11.3 hours a week in 2011, while single fathers went from less, get this, this is a staggering statistic, while single fathers went from less than 1 hour a week in 1985 to about 8 hours a week in 2011, an eight time, I mean, they didn't bother to say that, an eight time increase in that time. And my question is how and why could this ever be something that is a bad? This is great. All of this is telling me is parents are taking more time to spend with their child and paying attention. And on that note, let me tell you why that is. Because they're not going to use the statistics that I'm going to use to support this. And that is because our life expectancy is up nearly more than double since the mid-18th century, right? We're to over 70 years now. So instead of having to struggle to just survive and find food, we now have the opportunity to spend more time with our children in their activities, rearing them, looking out for their mental and emotional state, understanding and cultivating relationships with them. Work hours have decreased from over 60 hours per week in the U.S. and Western Europe in the late 1800s to around 40 hours today. So that's a third less. Housework has decreased from 58 hours per week in the early in 1900 to 15.5 hours in 2011. So that's nearly a two-thirds drop because of innovation, right? Washing machines and everything else that we have that is a luxury these days. We have less housework that we're doing now so we can spend more time with our children. The portion of the world living in extreme poverty is falling from almost 90%. So almost 90% of the population in the entire world in 1820 was in extreme poverty. Today, it's only 10%. And while 10% is still a big number, it's still from 90% to 10% in that time frame in just 200 years. It's absolutely staggering. That is another reason why we are having the opportunity to spend more time with our children. And the last one is spending on necessities in the U.S. is down from over 60% of disposable income in 1929 to about a third in 2016. So those would be the real reasons why we are getting to spend some more time with our children. But let's go back to this social and political statement masquerading as a parenting article. And they go on to say, spending more time with children has been a trend over the past half century, not just in the U.S., but in other wealthy Western countries. However, many of these societies have social policies that don't force parents to create this time, be giving up their social lives. I don't know how much of our social life did we give up, or has the society become so much better and so much more improved that we just have more time in general to be able to dedicate to our kids based upon some of those statistics that that I shared with you. And there's a great book out there also. If you want to look at some more positive statistics, it's written by a Harvard professor, Steven Pinker. I've mentioned it on the show before. Hopefully someday the show gets big enough, I can have him on and we can talk about this. But it's called Enlightenment Now. And it is 70 graphs and charts that show that now is the best time in the history of the world to be alive. And it shows all of these graphs and charts, and it dispels all of the ridiculous crap that you hear on the news every night and watch and hear and read in the newspaper and hear on the radio, and talks about all of the good that is going on in society. So, and a lot of it, those statistics that I just pulled and talked about, I just stated came from those as well, or came from that book as well. So that pretty much dispels that we have to give up our social lives, and that's the only reason that we're doing that for our kids. I think that's a load of BS. They go on to say, in many ways, today's parents seem to hope their children will provide the meaning and support prior generations of parents received from adult friends, hobbies, and organizational memberships. Nearly three quarters of parents of school-aged children say they hope to be best friends with their children when they're grown. Well, so I don't know that why that's a bad thing to say. I think that's a phenomenal thing. And anybody that might say, otherwise you might question their reason for, you know, developing a relationship with your children and rearing your children in the best possible manner. What, you know, other than the fact that they're going to grow up to be good citizens and good people and productive members of society, but also to have a phenomenal relationship once they're grown. So they don't state where they get any of this, that nearly 2/3 of parents, but hey, I hope that you have that that same desire, because I have that same desire as well. Now they go on to say, in the same way that the concept of soulmates evolved to capture a romantic ideal, being best friends with your child captures a parental ideal that all the love and resources a parent pours into a child are paid off by the child's shared desire for closeness. Well, you know, I again, creating this romantic ideal is akin to the idea that that they created centuries ago of romantic love, and that's a whole nother show that we can talk about. But it's just a false idea of what it is to be in love and to be loving somebody and to be in a relationship that takes time and effort and dedication. So this romantic notion of soulmate friends of your child is no different than the ridiculous romantic love ideal of Disney and all the other Hollywood crap that's been poured into us and our children's minds about what relationships are like as well. And on that note, just pay attention to this, because this is what we're hearing. So now this is, this is carrying over these ideas, these romantic ideas. And we're going to, a little bit later here, they're going to get into some of this real emotional stuff that's going to just really tug at you, just like all the movies do, that they tug at you. So just be aware of this, because it's not reality. Next paragraph: parents who have sacrificed their friendships for their child may find themselves lonely and isolated when the child withdraws, wants more space, or rejects the parent. Realities with sometimes grave consequences, because loneliness and social isolation are associated with increased risk of premature death, dementia, heart disease, depression, and suicide. Well, duh. But is it our kids' fault when they want to go on their own? No, I don't think so. I've never thought that. As my teen daughters start to grow and they start to exert their desire to have more freedom and do more things and have more friends, there's never one time that I thought, oh, I'm going to be so lonely and I'm going to, this is going to lead to my dementia and my heart disease and depression and suicide, because I've only wrapped up my entire life in my children. And so let's talk about that for a brief second. If you are wrapping up your entire lives in your children, then you need to stop doing that. And you need to make sure that there is a healthy balance of what you've got going on in your relationship. Because there are some times when that does happen, and you just need to stop and you need to reassess your situation. Again, like I said earlier in the show, you need to make sure that you're taking care of those basic things for yourself: getting the rest you need, taking care of your health, eating right, sleeping right, exercising, doing all of those things. And while it's hard to do lots of times when we've got kids, that you might need to schedule those in. You absolutely need to do those. You cannot have your entire life revolving around your children. So if that is the perspective that you have, and I'm sure there probably are many men out there that is the case, especially if you were in a family dynamic, and it may have been an unhealthy family dynamic. There are quite a few families that are out there sometimes that are, child-centric, which is the wrong way in which the hierarchy of a family needs to flow. And that's a different topic and that's a different show, but you need to make sure that you are taking care of yourself, that you do know and the kids do know that that is an important thing. Because again, that also goes back to demonstrating to them a proper way in which that they will be able to go forward and take care of themselves in their adult life as well. So we're almost wrapping up here. He quotes another now historian. So we've heard mostly historians, sociologists, an author explained in an email, the neglect of parents' own social networks and other adult relationships can make them too reliant on their kids for support and stimulation, leaving them with fewer outside interests when kids move out or aren't as attentive as the parents want them to be. So now we're going to get into the nitty-gritty of it. And that is, policies and practices around work and family life have failed to keep pace with change in women's economic roles. More and more households depend on the income of two earners, leaving limited time for activities beyond work. American parents are working longer and harder than ever with less and less to show for it. Well, we know that's not true because I just dispelled that with some of those statistics, and Steven Pinker's book dispels all of this with 70 different charts. Given these harsh realities, it goes on to say, it's not surprising that in a report from the Council on Contemporary Families, which is where he works, or is a senior fellow, American parents were ranked least happy among the 22 OECD countries they studied. So again, all subjective or objective criteria based on some study from his organization. Now here comes the emotion. Childhood has become the last bastion of kindness, the last place where we may find more love in the world than there appears to be, writes the psychoanalyst Adam Phillips and historian Barbara Taylor. Interesting. Indeed, the modern obsession with child rearing may be no more and no less than an obsession about the possibility of kindness in a society that makes it harder and harder to believe in kindness. Exactly. That is exactly why we are all wanting to spend time with our kids, because we just have no hope in the rest of the world and humanity, because there's no kindness left, and we can only find that in our children. Wow. Well, so that's taken us to the last paragraph in this article. And so far, I have not really found anything that substantiates any of that that title, that parents are sacrificing their social lives on the altar of intensive parenting, other than some historians, quote unquote, and some sociologists. And I think there was one economist in there that they cherry-picked some quotes from. But here's the kicker at the end, and so this is where they just let us fully know that this was this is a social policy paper masquerading as a parenting article. And it says, many countries keep the reservoirs of their citizens protected with social policies that allow them to relax and spend time not only with children but also with hobbies, communities, and friends. We would be wise to do the same. Yes, America must change to be the same as all of those other countries. So friends, this is just another example. If you pay attention on an ongoing basis, whether it's movies that you're watching, whether it's music that you're listening to, articles that you're reading, news channels, which I highly suggest turning off and not watching, sourcing your news where you want to find it, you're going to find that all of this stuff is an attempt to undermine your family. It is literally a war on your family. And this center for, what is it that he works for? The Council on Contemporary Families, instead of talking about how we can keep intact families, how we can make families stronger, stay together, build those up. They're talking about more social policies to allow the normalization of everything else that we've got going on in our society, and allow us to find a better way to do what? I'm not sure. I mean, other than his conclusion that we need to find better social policies that I'm sure are some sort of utopian idea based upon the beginning talk about the about communism and the ideas around how we were obsessed with that in the 70s, rightly so, that they have no real specific ways in which they're professing to help families from this Council on Contemporary Families. So again, pay attention to this, gentlemen. Pay attention to this in your therapy. Okay, if you're in individual therapy and your therapist is talking about any of these things, listen to this, listen for this language. It'll clue you in. Listen in the courts, listen to your attorneys and pay attention to this. And most importantly, when you're hearing this, fight the good fight, right? Fight the good fight for your family, because this is all a false narrative. This is all meant to divide us. It's meant to get government more involved in our lives, which if you're in the family court system, you know that we do not want that. I can tell you, having been in it for so many years now, you do not want more government in your lives, especially the family law system. So we need to be paying attention on how we can take control of our lives, how we can move ourselves forward, and how we can be the stewards of our lives and our families in the future. And that's what we're all about here at the Divorced Advocate, helping you to create a healthier and less traumatic divorce. Thanks for listening today. It's a little bit of a long rant, and I gotta point this out to everybody, because it's out there and it's prevalent. Please get engaged with us. If I can help, reach out to me. Please book a 30-minute free, no obligation consultation. Let's talk about what you've got going on with your divorce or post divorce. Also, get engaged with some of those free resources. The Dad's Divorce Meetup. There's also dadsdivorceblueprint.com, where you can download the Dad's Divorce Blueprint PDF. It's just five steps that I use to help the men that I work with in private practice in getting through their divorce. And that's it. Have a great week. Next week will be our anniversary, one-year anniversary show. So I'm very excited about that, and to be celebrating having been with you for one full year. Thanks so much. Take care.